Hi friends, just a reminder that neither Jody nor I are physicians and none of the following should be considered medical advice. Also, in this rapidly developing situation, the best source of information on your community and the regulations and recommendations that apply is your local health department. If you're listening to this in the future, first of all, congratulations on being in the future. Second of all, just know that the beginning of 2020 was a complicated time. Now, please enjoy the theme song by Jonathan Colton. DNA, you're in my heart. DNA. Hi, and welcome to episode 16 of BioBreak, a conversation with your friendly neighborhood biologist. I'm Andy Walsh. I'm here with my wife, Jody.
Hi there.
How are we doing?
Our podcast can drive.
In this state, it can, yes. And speaking of people who can almost drive, we've got a couple of other teenagers with us. Our daughter, Sadie.
Hi.
And our son, Caleb.
Howdy.
We've had them both on the podcast before, but never all together. So here we are all as a family. How's everybody doing?
Pretty good.
I think we need a break.
We do need a break. So what's coming up this week? Anybody know what's happening this week?
Comic-Con?
Yeah. So this week is when the San Diego Comic-Con was scheduled to happen. And for...
So we're going to San Diego, right?
Would that that were the case. It's going to look a little bit different this year. They're going to go all online. They're calling it Comic-Con at Home. They're going to have a bunch of online panels on streaming on YouTube, mostly. And it's free for anybody to go and watch. There are scheduled times when the panels will go live. But then the videos will be up and you can watch them later on and so forth. And yeah, so, I, obviously, it's still a big commercial endeavor and so forth. And they're not paying us to say any of this, but... I did think that it was a really nice thing for them to do, to make it free for everybody. And it's probably a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to kind of see what San Diego Comic-Con is about.
I was lucky to have my own Comic-Con concierge who sent me emails with various videos that I might like. And that was kind of nice.
Really? That sounds like a very thoughtful gesture. If you don't have your own Comic-Con concierge, you can go and check out the online schedule. It's on SCED. I think it's like comiccon2020.sced.com. SCED is S-C-H-E-D.
But, in all honesty, that might not have been something I would have necessarily done. So it was really nice to get that email from you. And for others out there who might not be into comics and superheroes, there's a lot of stuff that's even beyond that. There's stuff for teaching. How do you storytelling in the classroom, how to use, art engagement or, comic book drawing, that kind of stuff. There is somebody that you are looking forward to, Sadie.
There's Shannon Messenger is doing a Keeper of Velocities panel, probably related to the upcoming book coming out in November.
And this is a book series that you are a very, very big fan of. She's nodding and making an interesting smiley face.
This is an audio medium, so we need to make sounds and not just gestures. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the books while we're here?
So it's about a girl named Sophie Foster who one day finds out that she is an elf and has all these cool special powers and has all sorts of crazy adventures in the elven world.
So what does it mean to be an elf in these stories?
So they basically, they look like humans, but so far they have an indefinite lifespan. The only sign of age is that their ears get pointy, so they don't start pointy. And they have skills that every elf has that's like telekinesis and... body temperature regulation, and,
You know that we all have the skill of body temperature regulation,
but
right?
Like, keeping yourself warm in, like, cold situations without, like, jackets and stuff.
Mental control of the body's temperature.
Yeah.
Okay, conscious control of it. Okay.
Yeah. And then they have...
They're empaths, too.
That's not it. That skill.
Oh.
Skills are more common things that every elf has, pretty much. And then there are abilities that are based off of genetics, and that is stuff like empaths, which can read other elves' feelings, and telepaths, and hydrokinetics, and inflictors, and all of that. There's a lot of them. Okay. A lot of different abilities.
Interesting. You know, you're talking about, since this is a biology podcast, I feel like I got to throw in some biology there. When you're talking about the ears, that's kind of interesting. So that's actually something that sort of happens with people, that as we age, our noses and our ears continue to grow because they are made of cartilage and not bone. Our bones stop growing at a certain point, but our cartilage continues to grow. And so that's why you might notice that as you get older, your ears seem a little bit bigger relative to the rest of your head than they were when you were younger. And so it actually kind of makes sense that for elves that would continue to grow as they age, and that would be a sign of aging.
I want to say I was thinking there was also something about being able to kind of temperature control, too. I think I was reading that in the swimming book that I was reading.
Okay.
Where, you know, for deep water, cold water swimmers, they can actually kind of more control their body temperature when they're swimming long distances in cold water. And
interesting. I hadn't heard about that. I know that there are some cultures in the Pacific, I believe it is, island people that spend a lot of time fishing and diving for seafood. And they've actually, you know, there are certain genes for being able to basically stay underwater longer,
yeah,
that are more common in those populations.
That was part of it, and this was another part where it's, I don't know that it's completely conscious, but it is something that just over time they're able to, you know, their body basically learns how to, you know, regulate itself within cold temperature.
Okay, so water. Yeah, so it could be what they call phenotype plasticity, as opposed to something genetic. Or
what is phenotype plasticity?
The range of expressions of behavior or biology or function that you can get in a species broader than just the genetic diversity of the species. So one, you know, even if you had identical genes to somebody, you might express it differently, you might look different, you might have different abilities, so forth, or be just based on context or environment or history or something like that. Anything else about the keepers and the elves do you think is interesting?
I mean, a lot. So, like, the abilities, they're completely based on genetics.
Okay.
So they have a process called matchmaking, and it kind of serves two purposes. So one, elves have an indefinite lifespan, and so if they were all allowed to just date freely, then there is a chance that you could accidentally marry your very distant cousin. There's that aspect of it, and then there's also, they look at your abilities and, like, your genetics, and they compare it with everybody else's to get to, like, perfectly combine to get good match.
Interesting. So they're trying, there's sort of some selective breeding going on.
Yeah.
Of a sort. Okay. And so it's the abilities that are genetic, you said?
Yes.
And do they tend to run in families then?
Yeah, pretty much.
Interesting.
Your thoughts from Caleb? From
I've actually been interested in a web series that's somewhat similar. It has people with a natural set of skills that they all have that normal humans don't. And they all each have genetic abilities that are sort of like superpowers. It's called Ruby. RWBY.
Okay.
Okay. And is it comics or prose stories or videos?
An animated series.
Oh, okay. Is that on YouTube or something?
Yes.
Okay. Cool.
So what do they do with... How do the stories use their abilities?
Well... It's sort of set up in this sort of futuristic fantasy world where people have technology, but there are also these monsters that they have to that tend to eat people, and there are people who go out and try to stop these monsters, and they tend to use their abilities for that.
Okay, interesting. Something that, reminded me of was the Sovereign from Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. It's not really developed in great detail in the movie, but there is a mention of the fact that they're this sort of perfect race of aliens because they make sure that they're kind of breeding for the right kinds of traits and to find people that to raise people that can fit into whatever needs the society has so that all the different functions are represented and there's a good distribution of tasks and skills and abilities and so forth so that sort of the society operates at peak efficiency. It wasn't explored much in the film. It was just kind of a fact about that race that was floated as part of the exposition and that presented as sort of why they were a formidable enemy to go up against because they've been sort of perfectly honed to do anything and everything that they set out to do. Of course, in our world, in the real world, there's some dark history associated with those kinds of things. And it's generally considered unethical to impose that level of control on people's choices of who they have kids with.
I think it's always going to go into a difficult area when you're trying to, rate, qualities as being, more desirable, less desirable. And I think, one of the things that hopefully we're learning is that there are all kinds of opportunities with all kinds of abilities, and with our abilities to hone and improve things, how likely is it that we can actually get closer and closer to some of these kinds of super abilities that, granted, it's unlikely we're going to be able to be, Elastigirl or
that one's tricky to imagine how that works with an internal rigid skeleton. That seems like a really far cry from normal human biology. Any that strike you as more plausible or more curious about?
I was telling Sadie that and this might be completely off topic, but while you can't necessarily turn green, if you eat too many carrots, you can turn orange.
Sure, okay.
She was trying to use that to lobby against having to eat carrots.
Yeah, so that's certainly a feature of, like in X-Men, that's one of the basic things of if you want to make a character stand out, character design stand out as a mutant, you can give them a different skin tone that doesn't normally occur within human variation. So there are purple people and blue people and so forth, blue X-Men and purple X-Men that... Yeah, and, there is some ability to affect your skin color by your diet. And certainly those colors exist in other animals and living things in nature. And so it's not entirely implausible that people could have genes that would express a very different kind of skin pigmentation at some point in the distant future or through some sort of genetic engineering or what have you.
I remember hearing a story somewhere where it was... Specifically, they were eating, primarily carrots, and so they started developing more of an orange.
Yeah, there are pigments in food that your body doesn't necessarily pass through, as fast as you're eating them, so they can accumulate in your body, and your skin can get kind of that orangey, reddish look. I think there's some things that can even go more of the red-blue end of things.
Well, we know eating a lot of meat doesn't make you more red, just from more of your blood flow goes through and...
That's a more immediate reaction. Yeah. I remember going to a game feast with your dad and, so everybody there was just eating all of these high protein dishes. And it was funny. You could kind of tell the moment when the room of, 100 plus men, almost all men, simultaneously developed that sort of flush from the meat sweats or that flush from eating a lot of protein. Of being very warm and everybody's kind of trying to get the doors open and get some airflow in. And, that kind of gets back to the temperature control and so forth, and that, our bodies do have a mechanism for regulating temperature, and that can fluctuate up and down and so forth. I'm trying to think, what are some other things that we saw on the Comic-Con schedule? There's some science of comics and superheroes and science fiction panels. I don't know exactly what all they're getting into, but
there was the science of the Mandalorian, like the tech of the Mandalorian.
Right, that's right. The Mandalorian gadgets and all that. Anybody have a favorite Mandalorian gadget?
Baby Yoda.
I know he's not a gadget.
Baby Yoda's crib.
I mean, that actually,
that
cool.
is really cool.
Because it carries Baby Yoda.
Mm-hmm. Yoda, it floats. I
mean, actually, thinking about it, the idea of the IG-11 droid that's reprogrammed into a nursing droid.
Okay.
Like, that's not really what it was designed for, but that became its function, and it does it surprisingly well.
Yeah, a certain amount of self-preservation being able to protect itself, that it was able to, from its existing programming and its existing mechanical functions, that it was able to transfer over to protecting the baby.
I think I continue to, I kind of like the idea of robots and kind of androids and, you know, I was seeing earlier this week, I think they were showing one of the baseball games that's going on in Asia where they had replaced fans with robots, robot people, and robot dogs.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted the dog to look more dog-like.
Yeah, there's some interesting things that go on there in terms of, you know, that impulse to make things that look familiar,
yeah.
Look humanoid, or look like other kinds of animals. But then, you know, you can also find that there are designs that are more effective for accomplishing what they want the robots to accomplish. Functionally, you know, so those dog robots, they don't tend to have a head or neck kind of thing, so they're just sort of a torso and legs, and their legs tend to bend different ways,
mm-hmm.
and they don't necessarily have the same kind of knee joints that go in the same direction as dog legs do, and so that can be a little bit, there's an uncanny valley aspect to it, of it looks kind of canine, and sometimes they behave in a kind of a canine fashion, either deliberately because they've been programmed that way, or just sort of that's happens, and then there are other things that they even go, well, that's not, a dog should not be able to do that, a dog's legs should not bend that way, or whatever.
Well, I think I wonder if that's the direction that design needs to go, you know, kind of similar along the lines of, you know, the production design within Star Wars, where, you know, they're not trying to make, you know, droids that look like, you know, the familiar things that we're used to. They're seem to be like they're designed around whatever function they serve within the universe. I don't know if you know more about that, Caleb.
Yeah, I think I actually, in the earlier days of quarantine, I actually found online a book about Star Wars droids that had, like, there are definitely droids that are humanoid, but it tends to be that the droids that look more familiar are supposed to look familiar because they're supposed to be interacting with humans. And even then, a lot of times the designs are based on assumptions by the creator, where they might have different, what they see as aesthetically pleasing in something might not be what humans think is aesthetically pleasing.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, so I mean, even just thinking of C-3PO and R2-D2, C-3PO is a very humanoid robot because his job is to be a protocol droid, to talk to people and to translate and to sort of facilitate human social interactions. And R2-D2 is a, you know, spaceship tech droid, and so his design is more about what interfaces with the spaceship than what looks human. But then you also have the issue that, well, C-3PO looks like a human in that he's got, you know, a round head and two arms and two legs, but there are lots of alien species that are sapient in the Star Wars galaxy, in the Star Wars universe, that don't look that way, that have different limbs, different body plans, even, you know, different head shapes and so forth. And so a protocol droid like that might not actually be helpful in all kinds of interspecies negotiations and social interactions, because he might not come across as, you know, he might not read as friendly or you know, recognizable in that same way to all the different species. So that's an interesting topic. while we're in space, I noticed there were a couple of NASA and space-themed panels that are not even necessarily connected to the fiction at all, that are just sort of updates on the space program and the Mars mission and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, there was one about, I think the title was something like, you can't get a tow truck past Mars. The challenges of designing, you know, a mission to Mars when you know that anything that goes wrong, you have to be able to fix and repair and so forth on your own and with the things that you brought with you. You can't call for help, because by the time a help mission can get to you, it's too late.
That sounds like something that our you know, scientists learned on Apollo 13.
Yeah,
I mean, that certainly, you know, I think they had anticipated that beforehand, but yeah, certainly, the famous scene that presumably I believe is based to some degree in reality, of trying to hack together an adapter for a carbon dioxide scrubber,
mm-hmm.
So that a square cartridge can fit in a round hole or vice versa, you know, is an exercise in you got to fix it with what you have in hand. Yeah, and even before that, you know, they're sending up redundant parts and trying to, you know, account for contingencies and so forth. But what are the kinds of comic books or stories people are excited about, or anything else that stood out to you on the Comic-Con schedule?
There was a Back to the Future program.
Right, the science of Back to the Future.
Yeah.
So that's presumably partly about the science of time travel and what is and isn't thought to be possible there. Any other bits of science from Back to the Future that...
Well, actually the Mr. Fusion energy reactor thing.
Okay.
Like, the concept of turning trash into fuel.
Mm-hmm. So that comes up in the second movie. That's something he puts on the car in the future. What stood out? What do you think was interesting about that? Or
like, it's... How do you get that to work? And is it really supposed to be a miniature fusion reactor?
I mean, you know, the movie doesn't explain it very well. It just calls it Mr. Fusion, and the joke there is that it's a fusion reactor that's as commonplace and a cheap a home appliance as a Mr. Coffee. And yeah, he puts in coffee grounds and banana peels whenever he gets out of the trash. You know, on some level, in principle, any elements, well, maybe not all elements, but the small elements that occur that are most common in organic things like bananas and coffee, you know, there's a lot of carbon and nitrogen and so forth, and those nuclei can be fused together to make heavier elements, and there is energy that's potentially released from that process.
Yeah.
So on some very theoretical level, there's a basis for that idea.
But we've barely gotten it to work.
Right. Cold fusion, meaning fusion reactions that do not require large amounts of energy as an input and are thus represented net positive gain of energy so that we can actually use it to power an electricity grid or something like that. That still remains elusive. It's still something people are pursuing because it would be a potentially clean and cheap source of fuel, because the raw materials are pretty much anything. But yeah, we haven't come close to anything like the Mr. Fusion. And that was supposed to be... We're now already 5 years past the future that they travel to in Back to the Future 2.
If we were able to create something like that, could that potentially be, like, better for the environment than, like, the current fuels we use?
Yeah, so the thought is that it would be better than burning fossil fuels for electricity, because there wouldn't be that byproduct of carbon dioxide that we'd be putting into the atmosphere that is contributing to the greenhouse gas effect in warming the planet.
And it would also mean less waste in landfills.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we could get it to the point where you could just put trash into it and have it come out, then yeah, absolutely, it would help to make good use of those materials as well. Yeah.
I'm guessing time travel is not figured out yet.
No, yeah. But there was that demonstration, I think, for the anniversary of the film, or rather for the when 2015 came around, where they actually made a hoverboard.
Oh, right.
That was pretty cool. That, you know, it was different from, it was not the hoverboards you can buy at the toy store or the...
Yeah, I've had issues with those. Those are not...
Right, that are really just on wheels. But the, but an actual, like,
occasionally.
If I remember correctly, it was a maglev, you know, it used magnets to levitate something that looked like the...
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering, like, why we haven't figured out ways to make more use out of maglev.
I think it requires a infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, it wouldn't be a way to make a hoverboard work
mm-hmm.
like it works in the movie, because you couldn't just take it anywhere. It would only work because they built a specific platform for it to operate on. You know, and we do use it for certain kinds of trains in that run on shorter distances. You know, I think the monorail.
I thought that's what that was at Disney World.
Yeah, that's my recollection, and I think there are some other sort of short distance transportation installations like that. But yeah, it's challenging to build over a long distance, is my understanding, because you have to have a relatively flat and stable and all that kind of stuff. But it's not something I've researched a ton, so I'm not positive what all the limitations are. Also, the materials to make those kinds of magnets are not easy to come by. They're a little bit more exotic. There's some of those rare earth metals and minerals and so forth that have their own issues in terms of how we get them and the labor that's involved in mining them and so forth, and the environmental cost. Not quite adamantium. But adamantium is magnetic, as Magneto continues to remind Wolverine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't look over anything more besides what you sent me, so I'm not really sure what else is on there. And I know I got a lot of the teacher stuff.
Yeah.
And artsy stuff.
You know, there's panels for different comics, both, you know, the big publishers of Marvel and DC and Image and so forth. And so, you know, there's things about the latest in the X-Men comics and presumably Superman and Batman. I don't remember specifically, but I know there's DC panels. There's, you know, a lot of independent and small press comics publishers are talking about their new series.
Was there anything beyond the Keeper of the Lost City CD that you were looking at?
Not or
was
really.
That was the one that you...
Just that and the Mandalorian stuff.
Any other comic book superpowers or anything that you want to ask about, you think are cool, or wonder if how plausible they are?
Would it be possible to control squirrels?
I
guess train them. I mean, I know we can't, you know, necessarily control them with our minds, but...
Yeah, so you're... I mean, Squirrel Girl, I don't know how much she controls squirrels. I think she just is able to communicate with them, and they find her persuasive.
Or they just like her because she's good person, human.
Yeah, something like that. You know, I mean, and some, you know, we have trained squirrels and other animals of that sort to do certain kinds of tasks.
I haven't come across any trained squirrels. That's...
I mean, you know, there are squirrels on television and in movies, right? And so they've been trained to some extent to do those behaviors. You know, and it's the standard kind of positive reinforcement. You did the thing we wanted to, so here's some food.
Ooh, we train them to do high fives?
I don't know that I've ever seen a squirrel trained to do a high five.
In the commercial.
Oh, well, you know, nowadays sometimes they do that with computer graphics too, so it's hard to tell.
I'll have to find it for you guys.
Yeah, you know, in terms of speaking the language or interpreting the language, I mean, there's definitely research in understanding the calls and the vocalizations of various different kinds of animals. Whales and dolphins are popular to study in that way, which makes me think of Aquaman. You know, Aquaman is a little bit more, actually seems to have some kind of telepathic ability. There's some interesting discussions and the comics have played that out, where there's sort of the ethics of, okay, is he actually sort of forcing them against their will to do what they want, or is he just making requests of them and they're responding freely? Somebody, I think it was Kelly Sue DeConnick, was talking about that and described it as Aquaman's superpower is asking for help. That he's not forcing these fish to do anything. He's just asking them to help, and some of them come and help him. And so that is actually his superpower, is asking for help, which I thought was an interesting way of putting it.
It'd be a very different, it's a different way of looking at a power.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that seems like a good power to have. asking for help. Do you have anything more, Caleb?
Not really.
Okay.
All right. Well, good. So thanks, everybody. And hopefully you'll find something on the Comic-Con schedule that is interesting to you, whether it's new stories or old familiar stories or new science or something else entirely. There's a lot there, and feel free to check it out and let us know what you found and what you thought was good. And yeah, you can do that by sending us an email to biobreakpod@gmail.com or writing @biobreakpod on Twitter or looking up Biobreak Podcast on Facebook. And we'd love to hear from you. Love to hear what you thought was cool. And if you have any other questions that you want us to talk about on future episodes of the podcast, we'd love to hear those too. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye.